as you all know, Mr. Sean Smith, our illustrious guest and friend, brought some of his own friends to tell stories tonight. The first of them is coming up now. This gentleman was described to me as a web designer, best known as a game and puzzle aficionado. I was told to call him quite the puzzler. He is the man behind the group The Mystery League. This is Sandy Weiss.
Hey, I just fell off my bike, so I'm a little shaken up. I'm all right, but if I act a little shaken, that's why. It's the second time I've done that in like 10 years, and I feel like by doing it the first time, I was able to avoid breaking my wrist this time. That's a thing, right? Like, you get better at not breaking your wrist? Okay. So I've always been kind of a slave to authenticity. I still am, and to the point that it's gotten me in trouble. One of my first jobs out of college, I would get in trouble, if not explicitly, implicitly, by audibly sighing in meetings. It was a terribly corporate job. And I was sitting there just listening to this bullshit and thinking, and then sighing audibly about how terrible it was. And then my friends would nudge me later and be like, you can't do that. And it's like recently, if I was working on a project and a friend was writing a bio for me and wrote, Sandy Weiss, something, 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 incapable of bullshit, which I love so much that I've adapted it as my Twitter bio. But when I was younger, I was a teenager, this was my chance to experiment with the dark arts of lying. And so I wasn't so true to that ethos. The best example of this was, I was a summer camp kid, and what I mean by that is not I went to summer camp, but my life was summer camp. I assume some of you know what I'm talking about. Some of you probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But for those of you who don't, summer camp was my life in the way that the rest of my life, the 9 months in which I was in school, was not. It was just the waiting period between summers. The waiting period until I got to be cool, at least a little bit. Summer camp, I had a life. I had a lot of, a little bit of respect. I had a few girlfriends. I had friends, more than two, which is how it was the rest of the year. And I don't say this to be sorry, to make you feel sorry for me, I just say it as a statement of fact. There was my regular life, and there was my summer camp life. And part of the reason that this was possible was I went to summer camp in Connecticut, and I went to high school in Indiana. And there were not many people at my summer camp from Indiana or even that far away. And so it was entirely divorced set of people, the people who knew me at home and the people who knew me at summer camp. The camp eventually moved off of the grounds of a private school in Connecticut called Avon Old Farms, which is this really stuffy, probably centuries old private school. They kicked us off after a few years because we were making too much of a mess of the place. And we had to find a new place to go, and ended up in northeastern Pennsylvania, which was weird because the camp was called New England Experience. And Pennsylvania is not in New England. But we ended up on a lake. It was lovely. It was more of a rustic camp. And I ended up being a lifer there, which means 8 weeks in the span of a summer. And I grew up graduated to be a CIT, and then I graduated to be a CA, which is a counselor's assistant, which was just shy of being someone who got money for the job, but still had the responsibilities. So camp lasted 8 weeks, and those 8 weeks were split up into 4 2-week sessions. And most campers came for 2 weeks and then left, and then a new set of campers would come in. But like I said, I was there for the whole summer. And on these Saturdays, between sessions, we had nothing to do as counselor's assistants and CITs. We were waiting around for the next session to begin. And one of these Saturdays, the counselors and the administration decided that they'd be nice to us for being such good slaves over the summer and take us to New York City. And so we loaded in a van and we drove to New York City, and we spent the day in the city, and then in the evening we went to one of the counselor's houses in Mount Kisco, which is this lovely rustic, bucolic town in upstate New York. And I remember that night as being one of those moments when you're a kid when you just have a glimpse into what adulthood is like and the coolness of it. There was sitting out on a patio overlooking a forest, drinking beer, I assume, probably was Mad Dog, to be honest. But when you're 15, you don't know. Everything looks cool. Talking about really important things. And I just remember sitting there watching these adults, by which I mean, of course, 19-year-olds, talk about important things and thinking, oh, this is what it's going to be like when I'm older and out of high school and in college and having access to things. Of course, I'm sure they were talking about bullshit and drinking bullshit. But to my eye and to my ear, it was all the same. But that night is not what I'm here to talk about. That night was me basking in the glow of what had happened earlier. And what had happened earlier was we'd gone to see a Broadway show. And this was in a matinee on Broadway. It was the musical Tommy, probably like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. And I was pretty happy because I knew Tommy. I grew up listening to classic rock, and so this was a bit of my domain. But we got sent to the theater in a bus. We got given our tickets, which were up in the third balcony. And as we sat there watching the show, I noticed my friends and my counselors mumbling audibly a few seats over and then looking at me. And then mumbling again and then looking at me and making faces at me. I had no idea what they were talking about. So at intermission, I say, what the fuck are you guys doing? Although I probably didn't say fuck because it wasn't that cool yet. I said, what's up? And they said, how do you get up here so fast? And I said, what do you mean? They said, well, you're down there and now you're up here. What's going on? And I say, what do you mean? And they go on and on like this. And finally, I figure out that what they're trying to tell me is that I look like Tommy. Which was not true, but he was a man with black hair down to his ears, and he was wearing a red shirt. For someone in the third balcony, that's enough. Enough for them to use as a tool to make fun of me, or to tease me. And I said, okay, that's funny. And we went back, and we watched the rest of the show. And then we left, and we're in the third floor, and me and a friend are talking, and we're just kind of following the crowd out of the theater. What we don't notice is we get sent down sort of a side stairwell. And so we're just walking down the stairwell, and we go outside, and we end up in this alley. Not in the front of the theater, but in an alley. And I stop my friend, and I say, Josh, I know where we are. We are next to the stage door. If we wait here, we will see the actors come out and greet them before anyone else can greet them, and we'll be able to get their autographs. Wait here. So we waited, and we waited, and waited, and someone finally came out, but we didn't recognize them, so we let them walk by. And then someone else came out, we didn't recognize them, so we didn't say anything. And then at that moment, I realized, oh, right, everyone's wearing costumes and makeup and wigs. I am not going to succeed at this, especially from how far away I was sitting. So we agree that this is a fool's errand, and we best be on our way. I need to describe to you the geography of where we were. We were not in an alley that extended from the street. There was the street, and then there was the theater, and we were in an alley behind the theater. So one end of the alley we were in was the building, and the other end was another building. And around that corner was an alley that connected the two. So we start walking to that connected alley. And as we get to the light where we can start to see what's in that alley, we notice there's a velvet rope and there's a guard and there are throngs of people stuffed there. And it occurs to us, this is where the people are waiting for autographs. We had gotten in behind the rope, but we couldn't do anything with that access because we had no idea what these actors looked like. We had to rely on their own admittance of being famous. So we said, screw it, we'll just go in. So we go into the crowd, we find our friends, and it's at that moment that the temptation grabbed me. And I turned to my friend Alyssa, and I said, hand me your playbill. And she did, and I took out my pen, and I signed it, and I gave it back to her. And I turn around, and 15 teenage girls are thrusting their playbills at me. And I take them and I sign them and I hand it back and I take another one and I sign it and I'm just scribbling the most insane, non-legible signature and I hand it back and I hear one of them say, Mommy, I don't think that was the right man. And to me, this lasted 15 minutes. It probably lasted 20 seconds, if that. But it was glorious. And at some moment in there, I think I must have gotten a harried look on my face and realized I had no escape route out of here. And my counselor at that moment, who had been slack-jawed the whole time, grabs my elbow, pulls me back and says, "Sir, your limo is waiting," and takes me out to the room. And I've never been as cool since.
Thank you, Sandy.
Man, I wish you were here on Tommy Night. Me and Dwight did some songs from Tommy like 2 months in a row. Got nothing tonight, man.